King Jimmy. Righto, revision. Last episode, the Lamb opened the first seal. And that released the first of the four horsemen. Horses we saw are chosen as symbols, or probably because they're fast, they're powerful, and they're irresistible, a bit like a tsunami. And the first horseman, we said, may be a symbol of the Antichrist. And that opened Pandora's box a bit. We saw that the best place to study Antichrist is not in apocalyptic literature because of all the symbols. It's too hard. Rather, we turn to Paul's description of Antichrist in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4. He opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And we saw that it's a terribly difficult passage to translate accurately. It may even say something like this. He is constantly opposing and exalting himself against all that is being called a god or that is an object of worship, so that he sat at a point, or will sit briefly at a point in the future, as a god into, or even possibly until, the sanctuary of God, setting himself up as a god. We concluded with the old chestnut that context is everything, and that we probably need to examine the surrounding verses of that passage in 2 Thessalonians to get a better handle on it. So today's menu is doing just that. We will continue with the first horseman and we'll move on. We'll examine the context of our major passage and we'll start at the beginning of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Here we go. Now, brethren, verse 1 and 2. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. So clearly, around that time, someone was saying the day of the Lord had come and gone. Like that. Some things never change, don't they? I mean, in 51 AD, they were saying the day of the Lord is gone. And now preterists say the day of the Lord was in AD 70 with the destruction of the temple and the introduction of the new and improved religion. But is it a problem to say that? Well, according to the next verse, it is. Let no one deceive you, he says, by any means. Very strong word, this. The normal word for deceive in Greek is planao. It's where we get the word planet from, would you believe? It means to wander. So they used to look up and all the stars in the sky were fixed in their relative positions, but then they had these strange wanderers that would do whatever they want. And that's why we call them planets. This is a different word. This is the word exapateo. It's very strong. It means to cheat, deceive, defraud in a lying or mocking manner. So Paul is saying, do not listen to this. This is bad news, right? It's a deception that's deliberately designed to lead you astray. So the day of the Lord cannot have come either in 51 AD or from our perspective in 70 AD. Why not? Because let anyone, no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. Now, what is meant by the falling away? I used the other translation 2 weeks ago and it said the rebellion. Same thing. What is the actual word? Well, it's a word you've heard. It's apostasia. It means a forsaking of the faith or the truth. And obviously it's where we get the English word apostasy from. Is this the same apostasy that Paul refers to in 1 Timothy? He says, chapter 4, verse 1, the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons. Crikey, that's like heavy, man. You know, doctrines of demons, that's serious. But he goes on to describe a form of ascetic Gnosticism that doesn't seem to be around today. Verse 3, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from foods which God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. Now, the reformers pounced on this and said, well, this is the Roman Catholic teachings of celibacy and don't eat meat on Fridays and things. But no, that's not what it's being talked about. It's more like the Hindu sadhus of Varanasi and Kathmandu who deny the physical including food for months at a time, for greater spiritual, whatever they get, thinness, I don't know. The clue, I think, is in the verse. He says, in latter times, the word there, "husteros," means later, after this. Whereas, when he talks about the end times, Paul uses the usual Greek word, 2 Timothy 3:1, know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. Eschatos, the last, the final, the end of things. And that's where we get the English or theological term eschatology, because in theological circles, and there's three of them for you, in theological circles, eschatology is the study of the end times. And at this moment, we are committing eschatology, if you like. Paul talks about another deception in his letter to Titus 1:13, rebuke deceivers sharply that they may be sound in the faith, not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men who turn from the truth. Now, in my opinion, here he's dealing with a contemporary issue rather than the great delusion. I think he's talking about Merkavah mysticism. Merkavah is the Hebrew word for chariot. And there was a form of Jewish Gnosticism that was based on Elijah's assumption to heaven in the chariot and all that. And it was the big problem at Colossae. When you read Paul's epistle to the Colossians, one of the things he was fighting against there was this Gnostic heresy with a Jewish flavour. And, of course, Titus was in Crete. Don't know if it was the same thing, but I think it's logical. Speaking of fables, in the last chapter Paul wrote before his death, 2 Timothy 4 verse 3, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. Doctrine can be any kind of education, not specifically theological, probably is in context, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears to hear, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. And there's always myths that people will latch onto, isn't it? There are popular myths. You know, the word fables there, mythos, myths, stories, legend. There's like, mice can't resist cheese. It's not quite true, is it? Or that bulls hate the colour red. Or today that gender is not assigned at birth. You know, it's another myth. In my opinion, the context of the passage in 2 Timothy reveals that it's myths within the church. Like what? Like God wants you to be rich? Prosperity gospel? Like the word of faith movement? If I believe something without doubting it, God is obliged to do my bidding? Is that the great apostasy? So I don't think so. I think ideas like that constitute foolishness within the church. But not apostasy. The people who believe that stuff are not abandoning the faith. They're just misguided. That's my opinion. Before the day of the Lord, before the Antichrist is revealed, there'll be a falling away from the faith. Has that happened already? I may have shown you this slide before, but this is the religious affiliations according to the Australian Census from Federation through to 2016. And at Federation, there was about 40% Anglican, looks like about 20-something percent Catholic, a whole bunch of other Protestant denominations. The purple bit, you see all that? Yeah, the purple bit is not stated in this tiny little yellow sliver here with other religions. Bottom line is that 97% of Australians at Federation identified themselves as Christians. In the 1960s, we had this new kid on the block, the green bit there, no religion, which is quite large today. And in 2016, only 51% of Australians said they were Christians. Now, we've had a census since then in 2021. It's now 43% of Australians say they identify as Christians. But I don't think that's the great apostasy, to be honest. I can't back this up. I have no evidence for it. But I suspect that the percentage of genuine followers of Christ hasn't changed much in the last century. It's just people are free to not conform more than they were then, I suspect. And probably more likely to hate God than they used to. It's like when Peter and I joined the RAAF, right? We got two dog tags. You remember them? Just like that? Yep. Long time ago, yeah. And there was a round one and a hexagonal one. If you died, they took the round one for their official records and they would leave the hexagonal one with you. If they could, they'd shove it in your mouth so that when they come around to collect the bodies, they'd have another record, so to speak. And on the back, it had your blood type, in case you were still alive. And on the front, it had your name, your service number, and your religion. Yeah. Why did you have your religion? So that dead and dying Catholics could receive the appropriate sacrament from a padre, a Catholic padre. Now, mine, like these here, which you probably can't read, mine said Church of England. But I wasn't. It was totally meaningless. I joined the RAAF in January 1976, so I would have been in the Anglican bit there. But it meant absolutely nothing. Confirmed sinner. Confirmed sinner, yeah. Do what you do, do well, they used to say, you know. And so I think that this is meaningless if we're looking for the great apostasy. I actually believe in Calvin's perseverance of the saints. Genuine believers don't jump ship. Speaking in the context of antichrists, John writes 1 John 2:19, they went out from us, but they didn't belong to us. For if they had belonged to us, they would have continued with us. But they left that they might be revealed that none of them belonged to us. I think we're stuck with 2 Thessalonians 2 to try and discover the apostasy which will lead to antichrist. There's not a lot to go on. We'll pick up where we left off. The falling away and the man of sin is revealed, or the son of perdition. Some scriptures say the man of lawlessness, the son of perdition, is the title applied to Judas Iscariot elsewhere in the Bible. Revealed, one other word you've probably heard, apocalypto, to reveal, to disclose, to unveil. In the introduction to this series, we used the illustration of a chef's cloche, you know, ta-da. So has Antichrist been around for a long time and is about to be revealed in the last days? I mean, his master, Satan, obviously has. We'll skip over verse 4. We flogged that to death already. Let's go to verse 5. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? Well, I wish you'd have told us, you know. Thanks, Paul. Nice one. And now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his own time. Well, we don't, Paul. We don't know what it is. God has not seen fit to tell us what it is in this day and age. And now you know what is restraining. Who or what is the restrainer? There are heaps of theories. I won't bore you with them. I think the operative word here is now. They didn't know who or what the restrainer was till Paul told them, but then they knew. So it can't be something modern. Does that make sense? Has to be something that's been around for a while. So let's continue for more clues. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. What's the mystery of lawlessness? The Greek word mystery, or we get mystery from the Greek word mysterion, and it's something previously hidden or partially hidden, now fully revealed, now apocalypto. Usually by God. God usually is the one who unveils mysteries to us. So clearly, lawlessness was well underway in 51 AD and presumably getting worse. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. And they've put a capital H for he, haven't they? So the translators are assuming it's God. What it actually says is only the who now restrains will do so until the is taken out of the way. It's saying the one or the thing. Now, it is masculine, all right? It is masculine, so it's a something. So who or what is the restrainer? Taken out of the way. Does he have to, or it have to be forcibly removed? Sounds a bit like that. I'll get you out of there. Well, not necessarily. In Greek, this is what we call the middle voice. We don't have it in English. We have nothing like it. We have active and passive. Active voice, the dog bit the man. Dog did the biting, man didn't. Passive voice, the man was bitten by the dog. The dog still did the biting. Greek has middle voice, the man somehow cooperated in the dog biting him. You know, we don't have anything like that, but they do. So somehow the restrainer participates in his own removal. And my best guess is that it's God's Spirit. With or without apocalyptic horses, I think God restrains man's depravity until the fullness of times, fullness of the times, which is when the fullness of the Gentiles have come in. Especially in the Middle East, which will lead to the time of Jacob's trouble, the salvation of Israel in the last days. Moving on. When God decides it's time, verse 8, and then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. When's that? That's the day of the Lord. That's the kingdom of God, isn't it? We still need more details if we're to ID the lawless one. Verse 9, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan. Well, no surprises there. With all power, signs and lying wonders. He works miracles. Or does he? Lying wonders, what are lying wonders? You know this Greek word too, pseudos. And pseudos means something false or something based on a lie. My opinion, for what it's worth, is they're probably genuine miracles, but he lyingly, falsely declares them, he attributes them to God, when in fact they'll be of Satan. That's the best I can come up with. And with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they may be saved. Sorry. Notice those who will be deceived. They did not receive the love of the truth. It's not that they didn't hear the truth. They didn't have the love of the truth. They didn't want to know what the truth was. And God will not be sympathetic to them. You know the old saying, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. And I know about you, I meet people like this every day. Try to share the Lord with them. Oh yeah, no, we know that that's not true because of this. No, actually that's not correct. This is, yeah, well, it's this one. No, it's not that. Yeah, well, you're just a moron. You know, it's just like, I don't want to go there. Leave me alone. Leave me in my own evil little thingy here. What can you do? God will ensure they get what they deserve. For this reason, we've seen this verse a few times, God will send them strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. What's unrighteousness? What's righteousness? Righteousness is a covenantal term. To be righteous is to be in good standing in the covenant, and to conduct yourself in righteousness is to conduct yourself in a manner in keeping with the covenant to which you belong. And all of mankind, know it or not, is in the Noahide covenant. You and I are fortunate enough, blessed enough to be part of the new covenant. And I guess those Jews who have not accepted Messiah are still under the Torah covenant, which they can't keep because there's no temple and priesthood. So, the fact that they had pleasure in unrighteousness means they enjoyed doing the opposite of what God says. So the Antichrist will deceive those who have no regard for the truth. Now that we've got a handle on the Antichrist, is that who the first horseman is? Call me Nikolai, you know? Well, I myself, personally speaking, say not exactly. I don't think so. Back to Revelation 6 and the horseman's weapons. Then a white horse appeared, and he who sat on it had a bow. Doesn't say he had any arrows, does it? Now, that may be implied in the text, but it doesn't actually say he had arrows. A bow without no arrows can't actually hurt you unless you get whacked on the head with it, I suppose. What does it sound like? How's about deception? That's a bow with no arrows. Satan is the father of lies, isn't he? His weapon is the lie. If he can lie enough to get people to kill you, well, that's a bonus. Then he's the dragon. But if he can't do that, he remains the serpent. Poisons from within with his lies. I think that's who the rider on the white horse is. His horse is white, indicating that people will think he's a good guy. And he's been around for a long time, but he won't conquer until the last days. That's why he'll be apocalypto, revealed in the last days, his deception. What is the great delusion? Well, the author of this website sees it as aliens. That's a popular one, believe it or not. I don't think that would have flown in 51 AD, so I don't think that's right. The mystery of the alien deception wasn't around then, as far as I know. Another says it's the return of the Nephilim, you know, the hybrid dudes in Genesis 6 and all that. I don't think it's that either. This one says that we'll become over-reliant on AI. Not the AI that you use on the farm, Jared, but a different kind of AI. Again, that wouldn't have been around in 51 AD. I don't think it's any of those things. See, what would God use the Great Tribulation for? Yes, it'll punish the wicked, but that's not its major aim, believe it or not. I'll give you a clue. It's also called the time of Jacob's trouble. See what it says in Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 7. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. Oh, is this some speaking of the end of exile? No. Verse 8, for it shall come to pass in that day, says the Lord of hosts, that I will break his yoke from your neck and will burst your bonds. Foreigners shall no more enslave. Well, that didn't happen after the exile, did it? Perhaps it's returned to the land in 1948? No. Verse 9, but they shall serve the Lord their God and David their king, whom I will raise up for them. And that certainly hasn't happened yet. The vast majority of Jews living in Israel are secular. They're not religious at all. And very, very, very few of them worship the Lord, the Messiah. Many times now, Luke 13:35, we've seen this. See, your house is left to you desolate, and assuredly I say to you, you will not see me until the time comes when you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. He's talking to Jerusalem and its inhabitants. Israel's near defeat by an evil coalition in the last days will turn them to their Messiah. So what kind of lie could be effective enough to bring the world to this point? Well, as the Nazi chief of propaganda supposedly said, Joseph Goebbels, if you repeat a lie often enough, people will believe it, and you will even come to believe it yourself. So what would be a really good old lie, maybe thousands of years old, often repeated, which could deceive the masses on planet Earth? The one that's been around for 3.5 millennia is that God's people aren't. That's it. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome, Islam, medieval Christianity, Russia, Hitler, Stalin, Islam again. This Muppet was photographed just last week in Hyde Park, Sydney, with a placard. The number one cause of child death globally is Israel. Are you serious? Well, he believes that. What better tool to pave the way for the time of Jacob's trouble than Jew hatred? In my opinion, the first horseman is an old deception divinely empowered to permit the ultimate revelation of the Antichrist. Well, God wouldn't allow people to be deceived, would he? You betcha. Romans 1:28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. But would he actually send a delusion? Exodus 14:8, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. Yes, El Guapo is the answer. God owns Satan and uses him like an attack dog to fulfill his own purposes. He's a puppet. He's a tool in God's hand. We saw examples of this in our topical series, Angels and Demons. The prophet Micaiah was standing before kings Ahab and Jehoshaphat around 850 BC. And he said, 1 Kings 22:21, then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord and said, I will persuade him. The Lord said to him, in what way? So he said, I will go and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And the Lord said, you shall persuade him and prevail. Go out and do so. A powerful delusion will be endorsed, sent, empowered by the Lord. The first horseman. I heard one of the four living creatures say with a voice like thunder, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a white horse. Who would be first in line to embrace and promote this horseman? Now, how about the religion of peace? That's already deceived 1.9 billion people. 1300 years ago, Islam split into two main camps, Sunni and Shia. The minority Shiites are causing most of the problems in the world for now. And that's, you know, Iran's 90%, Iraq more than half. You've got the Yemenis, the Houthis down in the south. There's Syria, Turkey, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. They're in the east of the country there. Shiites await a messianic figure. They call him the Imam Mahdi. And Sunnis are increasingly coming to believe in and long for this messianic figure to come. How does he arrive on the scene? On a white horse. According to this Shia website, the Mahdi will perform miracles, and it lists five examples that will identify this individual, one of which is he will get birds to speak and talk, right? Because according to the Quran, that's what Jesus did. Now, there's no evidence in the Gospels whatsoever, of course, but they say that's what Jesus did. And so this messianic figure will be as good as or greater than Jesus. And in fact, when they arrive in Mecca or wherever it is, Jesus will be invited to pray, but he will defer to the Mahdi, who is greater than he. And together they'll destroy the Jews and the Christians and so on. Some say they've already seen his miracles. This is just a picture from a YouTube video I saw. These people claim that the Mahdi made the moon disappear for a period of time. I suspect it was probably a cloud. I take it with a grain of salt. But the lady on top there, I heard her testimony, and she sounds like an Aussie, you know. Antichrist could sit briefly in the place where the sanctuary of God should be, without the need for one of these, necessarily. So in summary, in my opinion, the first horseman is mass deception, paving the way or Antichrist. And perhaps he's already ridden. Could professing Christians get on the bandwagon with anti-Semitism? Could they fall away from the faith in that manner? They've been doing it for years, folks. BDS movement is boycott, divest and sanction Israel. And a number of Christian denominations are on board with it. And I'll show you some. I've showed them before, and I stress these are not Australian denominations. These are their counterparts in the US, okay? No relation. But we've got the United Methodist, the United Church of Christ, the Presbyterian Church, the Religious Society of Friends, better known as the Quakers. This chap is the current head of the World Council of Churches, Reverend Professor Doctor Jerry Pillay. Reverend Professor Doctor, that's pretty hard to top, isn't it? I just assumed that doctor would be implied in professor, but unless he's a medical doctor as well, he could be. Anyway, he wrote some years ago, the Palestinians are asking the world for economic, cultural and other forms of boycott, divestment and sanctions, a strategy that helped us to end apartheid in South Africa. We believe that maximum pressure must be put on Israel to abide by international law. This is the head of the World Council of Churches today. He was appointed last year. Shown you in this slide before, this was 10 years ago, the first In Defence of Christians summit was held in the Middle East. It was attended by leaders of all the persecuted churches around the place. Senator Ted Cruz was the guest speaker. He's a committed Christian. He was a presidential candidate at one stage, Republican senator. And he said, we have to stand with Israel against those who would persecute both of us. And he was booed off the stage, couldn't finish his speech. On the Mount of Olives, the disciples asked the Master what would be the sign of his coming. How did he reply? Jesus answered, see to it that no one deceives you. Now that we know what the first horseman is, verse 3, when he opened the second seal, I heard a second living creature saying, come. Well, what could be worse than mass deception, mass delusion? Well, that's what we'll look at next week. And just while I'm here, next week and then the 8th, and then I'm here back on the 22nd. We're not having a Christmas service, I understand, on Christmas Day. Do you want a Christmas message? Anyone vote for a Christmas message? Hands up if you'd prefer a Christmas message. Right? Hands up if you'd prefer more of Revelation. Christmas message it is. Done. Thanks.